Welcome to the Kate Daly Show. This show is not like any other show out there. We tell the truth. No one controls what we say, and we're on a mission to expose what is going on in government on both sides of the aisle and in between. You can go to katedalyradio.com for more podcasts of the show, and thanks for listening in.
Do not listen to this show. The truth can be scary. The Kate Daly Show starts now.
I brought up the subject of what's going to happen after we take over the government. We become responsible then for administrating, 250 million people. And there was no answers. No one had given any thought to economics. How are you going to clothe and feed these people? The only thing that I could get was that they expected that the Cubans and the North Vietnamese and the Chinese and the Russians would all want to occupy different portions of the United States. They also believed that their immediate responsibility would be to protect against what they called the counter-revolution. And they felt that this counter-revolution could best be guarded against by creating and establishing re-education centers in the Southwest, where we would take all the people who needed to be re-educated into the new way of thinking and teach them how things were going to be. I ask, well, what is going to happen to those people that we can't re-educate, that are die-hard capitalists? And the reply was that they'd have to be eliminated. And when I pursued this further, they estimated that they would have to eliminate 25 million people in these re-education centers. And when I say eliminate, I mean kill 25 million people. I want you to imagine sitting in a room with 25 people, most of which have graduate degrees from Columbia and other well-known educational centers, and hear them figuring out the logistics for the elimination of 25 million people. And they were dead serious.
Larry Graswall, FBI informant, on attending meetings for the Bill Ayers Weather Underground. Yeah. 250 million. So you know that this was said a while ago. And it's pretty amazing how, I'm going to say, that whole movement. I'm glad we had informants on it. I'm glad that there were, that we learned about what some of the goals were. Very interesting time. In fact, this is going to be a very intriguing hour for you, because normally I would do this on the national show, but actually today I want to do this on this hour, and I want to go through a lot of predictions with you that were made in 1935. I want to do predictions that were made in 1969. I want to revisit that. I haven't visited that in a long time, and it's very, very intriguing what's going on right now, and I want to give you one for the future. How about that? It's really, really scary. Welcome to the Kate Daly Show. Glad you're tuned in. Make sure you get over to Dr. Diet if you want to lose weight, if you want to get healthy, if you want to get in shape. They've got a great buddy program right now. But these are the guys that helped me lose weight and do it fast. I mean, I did it fast. It was awesome, and I've kept it off, so it didn't come back. And I really absolutely love what they do. Make sure you get over there. Get some help. It's just, you know what? You can try and try and try, and sometimes it just won't work. Getting some help really does make a difference. 628-DIET. 628-DIET. I have two guests coming on today. Total doubleheader Kate Daly Show for you. I got Joel Skousen in the first national hour, and then we're going to wind up the show today with Patrick Wood and from Technocracy. And both guests are so phenomenal that I'm really happy that that they both agreed to come on and share with them what they think, and share with all of you what they think, and also really give us some insight on some things that they think are going on right now, and so forth. So it's going to be a good one today. All right, so I'm going to launch into this. I've got to get going on this, otherwise I'm going to run out of time. And the thing is this came from, on the heels of having Patrick Wood on. Patrick Wood is probably my guest in the last hour. He's probably going to talk about this a little bit. And this is what is called basically the Technocracy Study Course. This was done in 1935, okay? And in 1935, what's really, how do I say this? It's very intriguing what we're up against. And when I hear predictions from the past, it really does make me think about how many well-laid plans there actually are. Okay. This was written, it was a founded technocracy, isn't a hit on technology. It's talking about how moving into the future, how all of it infiltrates our lives and what is going on with all of these modern techniques, if you want to call them, or how they disguise them or talked about them back then. Not disguise, that's a bad word. How they actually claimed, you know, what they were going to do. And then, of course, what they actually do in the future. So this was founded in 1934 by Howard Scott and M. King Hubbard. And they wrote what was called the Technocracy Study Course. This is 1935. This was their go-to Bible for all the meetings that they held in the United States and Canada. And at the time had well over 500,000 dues-paying members. There's really little known about Howard Scott. In fact, his whole background is just kind of mysterious. Nobody really knows. He was born in 1890. He was Scottish, and he claims to have been educated in Europe, but nobody really knows where he went to school. There's no real records of him, which is kind of an interesting thing, right? So he wrote this, and I want you to listen up, because this was just post-World War I, not even launching into World War II yet. Here we go. I'm going to read the statement for you. He taught this study guide's about over 300 pages, and it's talking about sort of labor and who we are and how kind of easily manipulated we are and so forth. A lot of pages of stuff if you want to read this. But let me read you the part about propaganda. Propaganda, among the most powerful devices in social control at the present time, are radio and the press. Remember, this is 1935. Just how powerful the press has been in the past can be seen when we review the propaganda which we were fed during the late World War. At the beginning of the World War, we were a nation of peace with the world, and the great majority of the American people were almost oblivious to the fact that Europe existed. Finally, the House of Morgan became dangerously overloaded with debts of the Allies and succeeded in involving, in some measure, a large number of American businessmen besides. Then, only in a few weeks before our declaration of war, our ambassador, Page, to England, cabled President Wilson that in order to maintain our preeminence in world trade, well, and to save the House of Morgan, it would be necessary for the United States to enter in a war on the side of the Allies. We entered, and in light of this, our entry into the world war to make the world safe for democracy, quote unquote. And the events that followed are extremely interesting. The American public has, as a whole, has little knowledge of and little interest in European affairs, and least of all, had a hatred of the Germans or a love for the French. Consequently, to make it a successful war, such a love and hate had to be created synthetically. To this end, the best liars and ballyhoo artists could be obtained were set to work grinding out lies about the atrocities of the Huns and disseminating them from lecture platform in the press to the American public. The results were those desired. America entered the war. Large profits were made, and the gullible public swallowed it hook, line, and sinker. The same devices that were used then with regard to the war have subsequently been used with regard to political and economic matters. Most of the major newspapers and magazines of wide circulation, such as the Saturday Evening Post, are chiefly organs of propaganda for favored business interests. While the control may be quite impersonal, it is not less positive because all these papers depend largely, very largely, upon the goodwill of business interests for their advertising, which is a highly essential part of their financing program. If they print the right stuff, advertising and prosperity is theirs. They don't, they stand a good chance of going out of business. And then he ends with this. As usual political practices, if one is to become a successful businessman, he will do so by engaging in those practices which characterize the activities of other successful businessmen. The fundamentals of survival under the price system, this is what he wrote a lot about in this study, that one must create debt claims against others faster than debt claims are created against him, or else he does not remain in business. Kind of amazing, huh? This was written in 1935. Also, it talked about adult incomes are to be made equal, though probably larger than the average ability to consume. Such an organization has no precedence of any of political forms. It is neither a democracy, a plutocracy, a dictatorship, or any of the other familiar political forms, which are completely inadequate and incompetent to handle the job. It is instead a technocracy being built upon the technological lines of the job in hand. And so he went on to write about a lot of those things. I thought the... Well, let me put it this way. This is one of the very, very small paragraphs in the study. While it is true that the illusion of alternatives is kept before the public through the device of opposing political parties, the fact remains that the similarity of opponents in all fundamental particulars is so great that it makes virtually no difference at all in the net effect to the country who wins the election. In other words, no question of really fundamental importance is ever submitted to popular election. The real controls are exercised at all times behind closed doors by a small minority of the population.
Ouch.
Crickets. Yeah. There's more there. I'm not going to get into a tremendous amount of detail on the study, the technocracy study guide, but they wrote that guide. And it was hard to read because really, and even describing the Great World War and how manipulated we were at the time, it's so hard to go back and to kind of fathom that. And I know even listening to this, it's got to be a little difficult for some that have a hard time with kind of digesting the illusion, if you will. But next, I want to talk about, go to 1969, and I do want to reexamine some of the things that I don't think I talked about on the show from Dr. Richard Day. And Dr. Richard Day gave a speech in 1969, and one of those that attended the speech was listening and ended up writing notes on the things that were written. And so the late Dr. Lawrence Dunnigan attended this lecture. This lecture was in Pittsburgh, the Pittsburgh Pediatric Society. And Dr. Richard Day was one of the biggest pieces of Planned Parenthood. And so he said that these plans were set in motion. And so I want to go through some of this with you and ask yourself how much of this came true from 1969, in which he told the doctors in attendance, very small meeting, that these things would happen, that there was absolutely no question, and that these plans had already been laid out. So this is a very interesting thing. I want to go over this real quick with you, and then I want to bring you into a prediction being made about our future. Kind of interesting, especially with Christianity. Very, very interesting. Be right back on the Kay Daly Show.
Talk lines are open now. Call 888-673-1450. This is the Kate Daly Show.
There'll be nobody left behind to grieve, and we will all go together when we go. What a comforting fact that is to know. Universal bereavement, an inspiring achievement. Yes, we all will go together when we go.
Oh, you know I have to keep my sense of humor.
We will go together when we go. All suffused with an incandescent glow. No one will have the endurance to collect on his insurance. Lloyd's of London will be loaded when they go.
All right. I have fun with bumpers because if I don't keep my sense of humor, I swear to you, swimming in this every day is just not easy. I welcome you back to the Kate Daly Show, and I appreciate you listening in. This is an interesting hour because I want to go through some of these things that Dr. Day said. I just went through 1935, kind of predicting and talking about what just happened with World War One and how manipulated we were into hate and into love and into all of these things so that we could get on board. It was interesting. And I've read so many different kinds of predictions and different things from the past because I think there's a lot to learn there. But I don't take everything they say. I take it with a grain of salt, of course, but I do find it intriguing, especially with what Dr. Day said, because he was such a pivotal member of the Planned Parenthood organization back in the day, in the 50s, 40s, 50s, 60s, that I find what he said so intriguing. Here we go. So he gave this speech, Dr. Day, to the Pittsburgh Pediatric Society. And this guy, born in 1905, died in 1989. He was the professor of pediatrics at Mount Sinai in New York. And he was also the medical director for Planned Parenthood Federation of America, that sick organization. And so he talked to these doctors, and he basically laid out all of these plans that were going to be made. And Dr. Lawrence Dunnigan attended this, and he wrote notes afterwards. And so some of this was his thoughts, too, as he's talking about, well, you know, talking about his notes. OK, he said that we would get used to constant change. Now, ask yourself this. Have any of these things happened that I'm about to go through with you? We would be used to constant change. Even getting things changing so fast that we wouldn't know what to do without change, that it would be overwhelming for a lot of people, especially older people, but that we would find that we were, always changing and having to grow into that. He said, sex without reproduction. He said it was a form of population control. He said the natural next step then was sex. He said sex must be separated from reproduction. And he said that it would be a tool of world government. The sex education was to get kids interested early, making the connection between sex and the need for early contraception in their lives, even before they became very sexually active. And he said, at this point, I was recalling some of my teachers, because he wrote this in the 80s, Lawrence Dunnigan. At this point, I was recalling some of my teachers, particularly in high school, and found it totally unbelievable to think of them agreeing, much less participating in the distributing of contraceptives to students. But he said, you know, and this reminds me, I had a girl on who was awesome from Indiana, and she was talking about how part of her assignment as a junior in high school was to go to, and she had to map out on a bus, she had to go to Planned Parenthood, and the teacher wanted her notes from going to Planned Parenthood, where it was, she had to get a pamphlet from there to prove that she went there. I mean, it was just alarming, so alarming. But I thought that this was kind of interesting. He also said that taxpayer-funded abortion. Now, he wrote, this was in 69, remember that. This was in 69. Tax-funded abortion is population control. And that back in 1969, this was 4 years before Roe versus Wade. And he said this in 1969, abortion will no longer be a crime. Abortion will be accepted as normal and would be paid for by taxes for people who could not afford their own, but that it was a tool of population control. He said, encouraging homosexuality. He said, anything goes. That was going to be the new motto of the next 30 years, and that people will be given permission to do this and it will actually be encouraged. Yeah. Interesting. And he said technology, promiscuous clothing. He said it will get more and more promiscuous, and we won't mind either. Technology. He said earlier that sex and reproduction would be, you know, limited or be separated. I'm sorry, but would be separated. You would have sex without reproduction, and then technology was reproduction without sex. This would be done in a laboratory more and more, and making babies would be done in laboratories more and more. He said families were to diminish in importance, that families would be limited in size. And he said he had talked about not being allowed to have more than two children, you know, sort of following the China, you know, China byline. Divorce would be made easier. And most people who marry will marry more than once. More people will not marry. Unmarried people would stay in hotels and live together. That would be very common. Nobody would even ask questions about it. It would be widely accepted as no different from married people being together. And more women will work outside the home. More men will be transferred to other cities. And in their jobs, more men would travel. Therefore, it would be harder for families to stay together. He said euthanasia and the demise pill. He said everyone has a right to live only so long, and the old are no longer useful, they will become a burden, and that they will more than happily accept their own demise as being in control of that and basically happy to have a going out party sort of thing, right? The use of hospitals. This was interesting. He said the access to hospitals would be tightly controlled. Identification would be needed to get into the building. Now, but remember, this is back in 69 before they had all of this. The security in and around hospitals would be established and gradually increased so that nobody without identification could get in and move inside the building. Now, you and I think of this for, you know, safety, right? But it is kind of interesting that he talked about this happening. Theft of hospital equipment would be allowed. In fact, he said access to hospitals would be so tightly controlled that I said that already, right? And then he said that it would be, we would have new difficult to diagnose and untreatable diseases. And that he said new diseases would appear that have never been seen before. This is in 69. These would be very difficult to diagnose, would be untreatable, at least for a long time. No elaboration on this was made, but he said, I remember not long after hearing this presentation, when I had a puzzling diagnosis to make, I'd be wondering, is this what he was talking about? Is this a case he was talking about? And then some years later, as AIDS ultimately developed, he said, I think AIDS was one example of what he was talking about. And suppressing cancer cures as a means of population control. By the way, when he talked about those new difficult to diagnose diseases, he said that they were manufactured, that they would be manufactured, not organically, spontaneously coming on the public. So suppressing cancer cures as a means of population control. He said, we can cure almost every kind of cancer right now. This is coming from Dr. Day. Information is on file at the Rockefeller Institute, if it's ever decided that it should be released. But consider, if people stop dying of cancer, how rapidly we would become overpopulated. And then he said, you may as well die of cancer or something else. Wow. He said, inducing heart attacks is a form of assassination. Another very interesting thing was heart attacks. He said, there is now a way to simulate a real heart attack, and it can be used as a means of assassination. I've seen a lot of people go down that way. Remember Andrew Breitbart in his 40s? Was going to expose some information on Obama's past? Restructuring education as a tool of indoctrination. Restructuring education. So he said another area was education. And one of the things I remember connecting here was what he said about religion, was that in addition to changing the Bible, he said that classics and literature would be changed. And he said, I seem to recall Mark Twain's writings being an example of that. But he said the casual reader reading a revised version of the classic would never even suspect there was a slight change. And somebody would have to go through it word by word to even recognize that any change was made of these classics. And he said the kids would end up spending more time in schools, but they wouldn't learn anything. And they would control who has access to information. So, and this is in general, he was already talking about computers and education. And this was back in 69. And he said, at that time, anybody that wanted computer access or access to books not directly related to their field of study would have to have a really good reason for doing so. Remember, back in the 60s. So this is, you know, when they were very, very brand new. But he said he said access would be denied to some information. And he said schools will be at the hub of the community, that schooling would become more important in people's overall life, that kids, in addition to their academic needs, would have to get into school activities unless they wanted to feel completely out of it. But spontaneous activities among kids wanting any activities outside of school, would almost be forced to get them through the school, that there would be few opportunities outside. He said some books would just disappear from libraries. Boy, we've seen that happen, haven't we? Changing laws also would be another area of discussion, that the states had blue laws about Sunday sales, you know, selling something on Sunday, certain Sunday activities. He said the blue laws would all be repealed. Gambling laws would be repealed and relaxed so that gambling could be increased. And he indicated that governments would get into gambling and that we've had a lot of state lotteries pop up since then. That's very true. Encouragement of drug abuse. To create a jungle atmosphere drug use would be increased. Boy, haven't we seen that. Alcohol use would be increased. Law enforcement efforts against drugs would be increased. And he said, when he first heard that, it sounded like a contradiction. Why would drug abuse simultaneously increase law enforcement against drug abuse? But the idea of that, in part, the increased availability of drugs would provide a sort of law of the jungle whereby the weak and the unfit would be selected out. And there was a statement made at the time, before Earth was overpopulated, there was a law of the jungle where only the fittest survived. And he said, that's, you know, that's strange, right? That we're talking a lot about drug abuse right now. I thought that was kind of interesting. Restrictions on travel. This was also a connection with something on overall restrictions on travel, but not everybody should be free to travel the way they do in the United States right now. He said people don't have a need to travel in that way. It's a privilege. It's kind of a high-handed way to put it. So that was kind of interesting. We'll see more and more restrictions on travel. And in light of the gold star coming out on the licenses and having a national license now, kind of interesting, right? I thought that was intriguing. The need for more jails and using hospitals as jails would be needed, he said. Hospitals would serve as jails. Some new hospital construction would then be designed as to make them adaptable to jail-like use if necessary. Also, consolidating policy. Consolidating policies where we've talked a lot about the cops now being sort of federalized because everything is sort of one and all the systems are shared data. So when you're dealing with something very rapidly, it becomes very become very federal, especially like in law enforcement, how it's becoming very consolidated. He said there would be more and more and more of that as we went to more consolidation in the future in health and in police. Police and everything. And boy, can we see that going on right now. Also, global interdependence. To create a new structure, you first have to tear down the old one. And American industry came under discussion. It was the first time I heard the term global interdependence or of that notion. And the stated plan was that different parts of the world would be assigned different roles in industry and commerce for a unified global system. And the continued preeminence of the United States and the relative independence and self-sufficiency of the United States would have to change. All of this from Dr. Richard Day, 1969. He was the previous medical director for Planned Parenthood, told this to doctors in a meeting that these were the well-laid plans that were about to happen going into the next century. And boy, scary, eerie, right? Be right back on The Kate Daly Show.
Talk lines are open now. Call 888-673-1450. This is the Kate Daly Show.
Oh yeah. Welcome back, Kate Daly Show. Make sure you get over to ABC Auto Body Central. They are fantastic and honest. I love it. They actually fixed my car. They did a fantastic job, and I really give them kudos. They really did a great job, and I was so glad I went to them because I think with some, you know, with this kind of firm, with ABC, Auto Body Central, they've got all the very best people. They are going to be in constant communication with you. They'll come to your home. They will check out your car there. I mean, they just make it really, really easy, and I just love it, and they wanted to get me back in my car as quickly as possible, and they did, and I just have to commend them for such a great job. Well done. Make sure you go to St. George, StGeorgeBodyShop.com. StGeorgeBodyShop.com. If you get in an accident, they're happening a lot lately, make sure that you get over to ABC. I would recommend them, hands down, no question. All right. I'm talking about some predictions and some things that were talked about by Dr. Richard Day. I'm revisiting this. I haven't revisited this for several years. And it is so interesting. Every time I read it, I kind of pick out new things that I'm like, wow, you know, I'm so blown away about how much of this has come true. But I want to move on. So we talked about global interdependence. He gave this speech. By the way, he was the former Planned Parenthood medical director, and also he gave the speech in 1969 to some doctors. I don't think he thought that any of those doctors would then write down what he said. And the person that did this, Richard Dunnigan, he actually had a photographic memory. He could actually remember everything. So it was kind of amazing. He was a very humble guy and came out and wrote down exactly what he said and his thoughts. So I'm reading some of his thoughts as well. Global interdependence. To create a new structure, you first have to tear the old one down. And he said this was that the certain parts of the world, remember, this is back in 69, certain parts of the world would be given different, assigned different roles in industry or commerce in a very unified global system so that countries would not have their relative independence and self-sufficiency.
Wow. Are we there or what?
We even have the NBA kowtowing to communist China because they don't want to tick off any businesses and the businesses that are kind of being blackmailed in the same way. It's kind of, it's very interesting to watch. Patriotism, he said, would go down the drain. He said, in this part of the discussion, he said, particularly in automobile industries, he says, I remember him saying that automobiles would be imported from Japan on an equal footing with our own domestically produced automobiles, but that Japanese would provide something better, things that would be made so that they would break and fall apart in the United States, so that people would tend to prefer the imported variety. And this would give a big of a boost, you know, to foreign competitors to get us to switch to this global interdependence. And so he said in 1969, Japanese automobiles, if they were sold here at all, he said, certainly were not very popular. But the idea was if you could get a little bit disgusted with your Ford or GM or Chrysler product or whatever, because little things like window handles would fall off more often as they wanted them to be, plastic parts would break. And it wouldn't hold up, that you would tend to want to buy something from somebody foreign. He's also said population shifts would eliminate traditions. So along the lines, there was a lot of talk about people losing their jobs as a result of industrial policy, and opportunities for retraining and population shifts would be brought about. And he said population shifts were to be brought about so that people could tend to move into the Sun Belt. And that would be sort of people without roots in their new locations. Traditions are easier to change in a place where there are a lot of transplanted people, to be honest. And he compared that to changing traditions in a place where people grew up and have extended family. That is very, very true. In fact, I'm starting a new piece next week on that very thing, and I'll talk about that more next week. World citizens, world sports. He said some in a heavy industry would remain, but just enough to maintain sort of a seedbed of industrial skills, which would be expanded if the plan didn't work out like it was intended. So the country would not be devoid of assets and skills, but this was just sort of a contingency plan. It was hoped and expected that the worldwide specialization would be carried on. Hunting, he said there was a discussion about hunting, not surprisingly. Hunting requires guns, and gun control is a big, big element of these plans. Remember, this is written in 69. I don't remember the details much, he said, but the idea that gun ownership is a privilege and not everybody should have guns, hunting was an inadequate excuse for owning guns, and everybody should be restricted in gun ownership. The few privileged people who should be allowed to hunt maybe could rent or borrow a gun from official quarters rather than their own, like a housing place inside each city. After all, everybody doesn't have a need for a gun. That's the way it was put to the doctors by Dr. Richard Day. He said sports for girls to de-emphasize femininity. Very important in sports. And that athletics would be pushed for girls. And this was intended to replace dolls. He said baby dolls would still be around, but you wouldn't see the number and variety of dolls anymore. And dolls would not be pushed because girls should not be thinking about babies or reproduction. Girls should be out on the athletic field just as boys are. And girls and boys really need not be that all that different. Tea sets would go by the way of dolls. And all these things were traditionally were thought of as feminine would be de-emphasized as girls got into more masculine pursuits. Entertainment, violent sex and desensitization movies would gradually be made more explicit as regards to sex and language. Food control. Food supplies would come under tight control. If population didn't slow down, food shortages would be created in a hurry and people would realize the dangers of overpopulation. Trying to create an overpopulation problem. ultimately, whether the population slows down or not, the food supply is to be brought under centralized control so that people would have enough to be well nourished, but would not have enough to support any fugitive from the new system. In other words, if you had a friend or relative who didn't sign on, growing ones, you know, that they would be, you know, basically not allowed to eat like you if they didn't sign on to this new system that will come about. Growing one's own food would be outlawed. This would be done under some sort of pretext. And there are two purposes for everything. One is the ostensible purpose and the other is the real purpose. And the ostensible purpose here would be that growing your own vegetables was unsafe. They would tell you this, that it would spread disease or something like that. So the acceptable idea was to protect the consumer, but the real idea was to limit the food supply. So growing your own food would become illegal. And if you persist in illegal activities like growing your own food, then you're a criminal. Weather control was mentioned. He made a very striking statement about this. He said, we can or soon will be able to control the weather. I've played many, many tapes, even from CIA, about this, that where they've already said, yes, of course, we're doing that. I don't even know why there's a question anymore in America. Know how people respond. He said the manipulation, making them do what you want. He said somewhere in the presentation, he made two statements, Dr. Richard Day in 1969. He said that I want to insert at this point. I don't remember where they were made, but they were in valid terms. One statement was people can carry in their minds and act upon two contradictory ideas at one time, provided these two contradictory ideas are kept so far apart, enough apart. Very, very interesting. You know, when you look at proof of global warming or global climate, I don't know what they're calling it now, whatever, global change, you could ask somebody, in the last 30 years, do we still have plants? Do we still have salmon? Do we still have trees? Do we still have all of these things? Look around you. Have you noticed anything in your last 30 years that has changed so dramatically that you feel like we're going to hit our demise in a decade? And the person would not be able to answer yes to that question. Yet they will believe a scientist saying that it's true. It's amazing, isn't it? You can't look around. You can't look at your own life for your own proof. So he actually talked about this. He said falsified scientific research somewhere. He said in a statement about scientific research data, he said will be falsified in order to bring about desired results. And he said, people will not ask the right questions. Some people are too trusting. He also said acceptance of the UN was coming. The end justifies the means. The acceptance of the UN was not as widespread then, but efforts would continue to give the United Nations increasing importance, and people would be more and more used to the idea of relinquishing national sovereignty. You know, get people to hate America, and they're very, very open to globalism. Terrorism, the great tool for control. Listen up. There was a discussion of terrorism, and terrorism would be used widely in Europe and in other parts of the world. Terrorism at that time would not be considered necessary in the United States. However, it would become necessary in the United States if the U.S. did not move rapidly enough toward accepting all of these goals. Terrorism would be used. The first time we really started looking at terrorism was probably more, I would say, light 80s going into 90s, probably more in the 2000s and on. Electronic payments. Now, this is back in 69, remember, but electronic payments initially would be based on different kinds of credit cards. These were already in use in 69, a little tiny bit, but not as much, you know, not as much now. But people would have credit cards with an electric strip on it. And once they got used to that, the advantage of having all that combined into a single credit card would be emphasized, serving a single monetary system. And that you wouldn't have to carry around all those things. You would just be very, very easy. He did go into implants and things like that at this point. So I'll move on because we've done shows on that too. Big Brother's watching you, that your TV would be able to watch you. Now, back in 69, of course, this was like, what? And then the big names come out and say Samsung. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. We implemented that technology a long time ago. That's fascinating. They even admitted it. Okay. Privately owned homes will be something, a thing of the past. Privately owned housing would become a thing of the past. People would be really kind of forced to live together more. More and more unsold houses would stay vacant. People just couldn't buy them. The cost of housing would not come down. People would rent small apartments and go into more of the small Agenda 21 housing that's coming up, that's cropping up. There would be no sympathy for them, for the majority who dwelled in the apartments. These homes would be taken by increased taxes or other regulations that would be detrimental to home ownership. You know, we always talk about the rising cost of property tax. This would all be done. It wouldn't be uncommon for you to have family members, non-family members living with you, even people you didn't know, to partner up with them to live together. And he said, have this in mind, in 1990, in the census, when they started asking in 1990, how many bedrooms in your home, how many bathrooms in your house, do you have a finished game room? He said, all of those things are personal and no interest to the government under our existing constitution at the time. But he said, you'll be asked those questions and you'll be decide how you're going to respond to them. He said, we can't have people cluttering up the place, so people will be taken into special places. People will disappear. He said that you have to sign allegiance to all the new systems coming in, that if you didn't support them, for the people that don't go along, there just won't be room for them. And he finished with this. He said, and here I don't remember the exact words, but the inference I drew was that these special places where they would be taken, they would not live very long. And he said something like disposed of humanely. But I don't remember very precisely what he said. He said just the impression that the system was not going to support them who would not go along with the system, that would leave death as the only alternative. Somewhere in this vein, he said that there would not be any martyrs. Do you remember my opening clip with Larry Grathal talking about Bill Ayer's underground system and how they just wanted to get rid of people? A good 25 million of us at the time. Anyway, when I first heard this, he said, I thought it meant the people who that would not be killed. But as the presentation developed, what he meant was that they would not be killed in such a way or disposed of in such a way that they could serve as inspiration to other people so that, you know, like martyrs do, so that people would not rally for those that were dead. And he said people will just disappear. Interesting. I don't mean to leave this hour on that kind of note, but I did want to say that this was just even part of what he talked about. There's so much more, and I can put it on the Kate Daly Show page. But I want you to read it to really ask yourself how much of it came true from 1969. And then what I'm going to do is right after the show, I'm going to record a podcast. And so it'll be the Not Aired podcast, and I want to talk about a prediction for the future. Have an open mind when you listen to this. I still have an open mind about it. I haven't made my mind up about it, actually. But I want to share it with you because I think it's that intriguing and that insane. And, well, just like this sounded insane to those in the room, I guess, right? So I will do that as a special podcast on The Kate Daly Show. You can find it on katedalyradio.com. I'll put it up after the show. And I really do want you to listen in and give me your thoughts on that because it'll be the not aired portion of the show. I really appreciate you listening in. That was a lot of information. I'll put the links on the Kate Daly Show page. But man, there's just so many people that have already said, this is what's going on. This is what's going on. And are you going to believe it when you start seeing it? Well, it's a good question, isn't it? I'll be right back with Joel Skousen, one of my favorite guests. It'll be a lot of fun. Stay with us. And then Patrick Wood following him. So on to the show. Be right. And I'll be right back. Thank you for listening to The Kate Daly Show. You can go to The Kate Daly Show on Facebook, The Kate Daly Show on Twitter. Happy to see you there. And also message me. I'd love to hear from you. You can email me at kate@katedalyradio.com. Go to katedalyradio.com for more podcasts of our live show.